Hi there, listeners. It's Farnoosh, and I just want to say I'm really honored that you've chosen to subscribe to So Money. I know there are a lot of podcasts out there. The fact that you're here is not lost on me. Now, if you're enjoying these episodes and you're benefiting from the advice and you want more, I've actually created something really special for us. It's called the So Money Members Club. It's an online platform where you can connect more closely with me and engage with fellow So Money fans who want to become more empowered in their financial lives. The website is SoMoneyMembers.com. And when you go there, you'll learn all the benefits, including exclusive monthly finance workshops, private group calls with me. You get your questions answered in our member community. I'm often in there weighing in, and you get instant access to all of our workshop recordings. We have a robust library that's growing. So far, we've had workshops on investing in real estate, kids and money, and how to earn more in 2024. And most of all, it's fun, positive, encouraging, all the things personal finance should be. Go to SoMoneyMembers.com, and I hope you'll join us. I'm limiting enrollment, and doors will close soon. Check out SoMoneyMembers.com. Did you know that I'm a podcast host and also a mind reader? Because I know that you want to grow your portfolio, to deal with the rising costs of inflation, to pay off your debt or your mortgage. You want to attack pretty much anything standing in the way of you and your financial freedom, right? Well, here's one solution: more knowledge. This podcast helps, I hope. And you can use Yahoo Finance, where you can get access to the news, data, and tools that you need to help reach your definition of financial freedom. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. They're the number one finance destination, and I know because I worked there for many years, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, customizable charts, so much more. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money Episode 682, Lisa Peterson, Life Coach.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Torabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
Hey, guys and gals. Welcome back to So Money. It's Farnoosh coming at you January 24th, 2018. Time is flying by. We're a few weeks into the new year, and I'm guessing that you may have made a resolution or two. Some of my resolutions, yes, some. I don't just make one. I make many because chances are I won't get to all of them, but I'll feel like I have to cast a wide net, right? And so I feel like I end up doing something, and that makes me happy. But one of them is to read more books, actual books. I find that with two children and a busy schedule, it's really hard to just sit down and read. I don't even have time to watch television. I don't have time to sleep, shower, watch television, read books, you know, the basics. So this is the year where I'm going to actually read some quality books, fun books, escape books. So if you have any recommendations for me, let me know. I also want to save a ton of money this year because, you know, my kids are growing up. Our apartment is great, but I want to someday be able to afford something bigger. And that takes years in the making. And I think I want to also exercise the power of no more this year, saying no. I said yes a lot last year. I think that's the baby effect. You kind of come out of your quasi-maternity leave. As an entrepreneur, you really don't have maternity leave. But I, you know, I took some time off work and I think that I felt this need to get back and just sink my teeth into work and be a yes person. And it paid off in spades, but it also meant that I was exhausted by the end of the year and wasn't able to really show up for my family in the way that I wanted to and should have. So read more books, exercise the power of no, and save more money. Our guest today helps people achieve their goals, particularly their financial goals. And she is a renowned life coach. She helps people get out of their own way when it comes to money so they can live a full life, a life of joy and abundance. Her name is Lisa Peterson. She is a longtime entrepreneur and money expert. And she also has her own podcast. If you're looking to add more to the roster, Art of Abundance is the name. Lisa, like probably many of us listening on this show, you know, she's had a fascination with money since a very young age. Her relationship, she admits, wasn't the healthiest. She talks about that. And also how a tragic death in the family was a life-changing moment for her, at which point she found the need to reconcile many relationships, including her relationship with money. How did she do it? Here's Lisa Peterson. Lisa Peterson, welcome to So Money. Happy New Year.
Thank you, Farnoosh, for having me.
It's so great to have you on the show. You spend so much of your work and your life helping people, as you say, cut through the clutter in their minds when it comes to money and just really be able to live richer, happier lives. We share an appreciation for that. And of course, everyone on this show arrives at this podcast because they want to learn how to make the most of their financial lives. But before we get to your advice, I want to learn more about you, Lisa, and what brought you to this space. We all have our own personal journeys when it comes to why we do what we do. So what drew you to the money space?
I have always loved money. I will be honest. From a very young
unapologetic
age. Exactly. I think I became very fascinated. And even as I was thinking about this conversation, I thought about some of the things in my childhood that just cracked me up because it's just not normal behavior. So I think I was destined to go into the money business, even though when I was an undergrad, I decided I wanted to be a fashion designer and I studied that. And quite frankly, the call of money was so strong that I ultimately left that and got my MBA and literally have been working in the money business for over 25 years.
What specifically was the calling? I mean, you know,
yeah,
it's not everybody who has that instinct. So what is it about you and that connection? What was there?
I think from an early age, because we did not have money and money was a very big struggle in my home and my parents weren't good at managing it, I think that I knew that if I could master money, that I would have a much better life than I was having growing up. And I took it to heart. And I see now my past, you know, my childhood, especially in my teens and then into that the 20s, I saw myself constantly going back to how can I understand this thing called money better so that I could create a better life for myself and for my family. And that's really where it came from.
I want to learn more about your childhood, but let's take a step back. What's your overarching money mantra, Lisa?
Now it's evolved a lot, but my money mantra is about realizing that money is for many of us, a very mental construct. And the more I can move money into my heart and come from a place of love rather than fear, the happier my life is.
So you have to consciously say to yourself, you know, that your money is not rooted from a place of fear. Is this something that goes back to your childhood?
Definitely. Yeah. And I notice, you know, as a coach, I notice that people gravitate to my work when they notice that there is a lot of fear around money, not having enough, not making enough, or even how it can just drive you to do things that you later regret. Like, wow, I sacrificed myself, you know, in the spirit of getting more money, and I sacrificed my wishes. And so I just see that money is so powerful you know, for our lives to create comfort and fun and enjoyment and security. But I've also reached a place where I see that there's so much more going on and that money's just part of the overall life equation. When I was young, I made it the whole entire equation, quite frankly.
So give us an example of that. I love hearing more about, I'm going to just keep on this with this childhood experience for just a little bit longer if we can, just because I think that seems to be the root of a lot of your mindset. What's one scene from childhood that captures what you've just, perhaps it was, you know, an experience, witnessing a lesson learned?
I think what comes to mind is that I would often look at decisions, even in my relationships with other people, from the lens of money, which is really embarrassing to you know, talk about, because you're like, what? That doesn't make any sense. But again, it was coming from this place of fear that I would always look at the money decision first. And then I'd look at, well, how's that going to affect everybody in the equation? And that was really just something that I was doing to, in my mind, to keep myself safe and protected. Like I thought that that was the best way to make the decisions rather than.
So can you give an example of a decision? Yeah. Like, was it with your family? Was it with friends?
Yeah. It's funny because it was such a common theme. I would say a big decision was when my husband and I have been together for over 30 years, and I got an opportunity to go to work for Wells Fargo back in the late 90s. And it was a huge opportunity. It was a big bump in pay. They were recruiting me. They were going to move us. It was just like something I felt like I had worked really hard to get to that stage. And now they were, you know, very much rolling out the red carpet for me to take a very cool job. And I did not let my husband really in on that decision. Like I made it because I saw, you know, the opportunity, I think financially and obviously, you know, from a sense of being successful, but I didn't include him in that decision. I literally was like, I'm doing this. If you want to come along, great, but this is what I'm going to do. And I had a baby at the time. Like it just blows my mind how selfish at the time I was, but that was my mind. Like I thought that that was the best way to make the decision. Does that help?
It does help. And did it backfire? How did it?
You know, it didn't, because ultimately we made some changes in our lives that, you know, when you're together with someone for that long, it's like a roller coaster is how I think of it. But what ended up happening is when he said, okay, I'm going to come, we made a decision that it would be for 1 year. And that at the end of that 1 year, we would both decide if that was a good decision or not, and then plan accordingly. And so that we did reach this compromise place, because he's a strong-willed person and he wasn't just doing it, but he understood that it was non-negotiable about how I wanted to take this job. And we, you know, uproot from where we were living, which was close to his parents. I mean, there were a lot of things, and he's like, okay, I give it a year. And then, you know, it ended up lasting a lot longer than that, but it worked out okay for us. So it was just in that moment, I could feel the way that I was making the decision wasn't ultimately the way that I make decisions now in any way.
When did you realize you had to make a shift?
I realized about a year, so that was in 1998. In about a year and a few months later, my dad was brutally murdered by his ex-girlfriend and her boyfriend. And that was the beginning of the shift that continues to this day. So that was like when I got news of what had happened to my father, I literally fell apart in the inside, not so much on the outside. Everybody thought I was fine, but on the inside, I just crumbled. And I saw how I had been making decisions from a total place of fear. And this fear that was provoked by my dad dying in the way he did caused me to start to unravel who I was and who I didn't want to be anymore.
Oh my gosh. So that's a
That's not something that I was expecting to hear necessarily at this point in the conversation, but I think we should dive into this a little bit more. I mean, so I'm trying to connect some dots, and I'm so sorry to hear this, first of all. This happened how many years ago?
In 1999.
Where were you in your life stage at that point?
So my daughter was 2 years old. We were living in the Bay Area. I was working for Wells Fargo, and I was, I think, like 32 at the time. And so it began a process that, you know, I now help my clients through these big life changes that sometimes happen when we least expect them. But I was going through it at a time when it wasn't happening to anyone I knew. And I had to figure out how to chart my course through the pain and the grief that I was going through at that time.
So you had mentioned earlier that your family was not the best with money and that there were these lessons that you learned. Your memory of your father as a child, fast forward to now as an adult, had things changed?
So when I was growing up, my parents had both come from pretty rough backgrounds with a lot of violence and trauma. And so they did their best to do what they could in our home. And I love them dearly, but I also knew that they weren't really capable of taking care of us in the way that I think a lot of children want to. And by the time my dad was killed, I had not spoken to him in about 10 years. So things had gotten so bad that I kind of pushed him out of my life because I felt like he was a very destructive influence. And I was trying to lead a different life from what I had grown up with. And I couldn't with him in my life, which made it all the more traumatic when that happened and I got the news for him. But I'm not sure if that connects the dots. But as you can imagine, especially, you know, when I went to work at Wells Fargo, kind of a funny thought is the people that I was working with had gone to Harvard and Stanford and had these completely different lives than I had grown up with. Like, I can't even begin to tell you how stark the contrast was. And in all fairness, I kept my background as much of a secret as I possibly could because it was very shameful and embarrassing to me to grow up the way that I had. And so when this happened with my dad, it was just so crazy, right? Because I was dealing with something that my peers and you know, that I worked with weren't really, they didn't have any idea how to support me. You know, they knew that it hadn't been good, but I tried to keep it very compartmentalized, which is what I had done with my life up to that point in time and actually continued to do for several more years after that because I just didn't know how to integrate who I was, what my backstory was into my career, into what I do, because it just seems so out of place.
Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can see new homes first, and they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes you like so you can find the home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours, even the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today. Did you know that I'm a podcast host and also a mind reader? Because I know that you want to grow your portfolio, to deal with the rising costs of inflation, to pay off your debt or your mortgage. You want to attack pretty much anything standing in the way of you and your financial freedom, right? Well, here's one solution. More knowledge. This podcast helps, I hope. And you can use Yahoo Finance, where you can get access to the news, data, and tools that you need to help reach your definition of financial freedom. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. They're the number one finance destination, and I know because I worked there for many years, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, customizable charts, so much more. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit Visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com. For the longest time, I dreaded buying bras. It was like shopping for jeans. Impossible. You want a bra that's sexy? You want a bra that's comfortable? You can't have both. Well, now you can, thanks to Third Love. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, the ick, the ugh, out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem or brablem. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school. Get smoothing, you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made with premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a double A cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. The weather's getting warmer as I record. It's a nice 73 degrees on the East Coast. So finally, time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and, fingers crossed, hello to shorts and tees. And I need to update my wardrobe for the long haul. And, you know, I don't want to spend a fortune. So luckily, I found Quince. I'm honest. I've got a lineup of timeless pieces from Quince that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year. I'm talking premium European linen dresses, blouses and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and tons more. Best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. I have t-shirts from Quince, pajamas from Quince. My very chic and fashionable sister-in-law, Hannah, her whole closet is Quince. And people often stop us and ask, where did you get this? Don't tell me the price. And then when I do, they're shopping on Quince.com. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to Quince.com/somoney for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's Quince.com/somoney to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/somoney.
And so now what is your story? You know, what is the Lisa Peterson story incorporating all of this, all of these life experiences? It sounds like you've come to a place where you've been able to integrate this and feel at peace with it. And so what's the story that now you share in terms of, you know, your money story, your life story?
Yeah. After this happened, I was drawn to meditation and I started to learn first for myself, and then I started teaching meditation within probably 3 or 4 years. And even at one point for many years, about 5 years, I was teaching meditation on a weekly basis in a spiritual center in my community. And over time, what I realized is that, and even just even realizing more recently, is that what has been happening for me is I've been learning and practicing and ultimately teaching others how to stop the mind from undermining our natural destiny. And that is what my story has been, that early on fear kind of hijacked me and sent me in one direction. But now I see that when we don't live, you know, from this place of fear and worry and judgment, that we can go back on course to finding the things that really, really get us excited in life that we may have noticed from a very young age. You know, the work that I do now has a lot to do with my empathy and my ability to see things that are beyond understanding for most people. I don't know where they come from, but I listen really deeply and I get information that allows me to help people in a very meaningful way. I've been doing that since I was a child. Never in my wildest dreams did I think that people would seek me out for this intuitive guidance that has been here all along, and to be paid for it and to make a living for it.
Who knew? Well, I think it makes sense now when you reflect on your experiences and your ability to own them, and really it has fueled, like you said, your ability to empathize with other people's goings on in their lives. You mentioned you practiced meditation and that really helped for you to arrive at a place of peace and acceptance. What for your clients and for those of us listening, if we are in a place of insecurity or fear when it comes to our finances, what are the practices to overcome that? There's obviously a lot of mental work, but is there anything else?
Yeah, the biggest thing I notice, and I do work with a lot of women, but I also work with men, and I do some groups with women. And one of the things that I notice in the first month when we do group work around healing our money stories is around the grudges and the regret and the guilt that we feel about our past with money. And that as long as those things are standing in the way, I cannot help people. So I focus a lot of attention on helping people see the commonality by sharing my own stories, by sharing other stories of how we are all doing the best that we can in any given moment. And the things that we did had reasons at the time for why we did them, but we have to forgive ourselves in order to move through and start to learn in the way that I like learning about money. If we have all of that baggage, it's difficult to learn the concepts and the techniques that can help us to take better care of ourselves financially.
Where do you see a lot of people's trepidations stemming from? And we've spent so much time talking about our backgrounds, our childhood. I sense that that is a root of a lot of it. But, there's also a lot of current complexity in the markets and the economy. There's a lot of uncertainty around where this world is headed. And I think that can also create a lot of insecurity and, feeling like you're just stuck and not knowing what the best moves are. So when you're coaching your clients, what kinds of issues come up that are creating these barriers?
Yeah. There's a gazillion different ones. One that comes up is when people have given so much to other people that they don't have enough for themselves. Like maybe they have children who needed more assistance or, grew up, but then weren't able to take care of themselves. And they end up giving and giving and giving, kind of like the giving tree, right? Where you just give and give and give. And at one point, a person wakes up and thinks, I've been giving so much that I don't even know anymore how to receive, how to ask for people to give to me. I'm so good at giving, but I'm not able to ask. And this happens in, the situations that I describe. It also happens in work. Like, I think a lot of us we find it easy to give, give services to others, but not so easy to ask and receive in return, to, ask for what we want to be paid for, even something as simple. One of the things I noticed I was always really good at when I worked for others is if I didn't feel like I was being paid well enough, I would figure out what I needed to do to go in and present my case for being paid better. And that is something that I've noticed very few women in particular feel comfortable doing, even now. And so it's opening, the whole cycle of giving and receiving has to be a full circle and equal. It's not just give, give, give and receive a little. I truly believe it has to be give and receive back so that you can fill your cup up again. And then you can give and receive. And so that's one of the things that comes up over and over again, is how important it is to make sure that not just that you're giving, but that you also are receiving back.
Right. And not feeling like there is so much scarcity, right? That I know, like, a big word on your site is abundance, abundance, abundance. And that's probably something that you work to get your clients to arrive feeling that the world is abundant.
Yeah. Yeah. And acknowledging the fact that when you're stuck inside of scarcity, it's really easy to operate from that place and not even know you're doing it. It's just surrounding you. And so a lot of my work, because of the mindfulness component, is bringing people's attention to those patterns of the way they talk to themselves, the way they talk to others, and showing them that there's another pathway. There's another way of thinking about things that doesn't involve scarcity.
Tell us about your biggest money mistake.
Oh, this is a good one. Terrible, actually. So in 2010, I was in the process of becoming a financial advisor, and I was going, I've gone through some pretty big shifts over the past 20 years, and this was a big one. And I knew that I wanted to leave my mortgage banking role and become a financial advisor. And at the same time, the idea of that I could actually do the transition, which kind of scared me. I didn't know if I could. A friend of mine suggested that I go see an astrologer. And I was like, you know what? Right now, I'll take anything.
Was her name, was it Cleo?
No.
The famous astrologer on TV.
Okay. And I went to see this guy, and it was funny because he had actually worked in investment banking. So I felt like he really understood me in a way that surprised me. And we became friends, and I would go to see him every once in a while. And I ended up quickly moving into financial advising and helping others. And within a few years, so probably around 2012, he started becoming very clear that the market was going to completely fall apart. And every time I'd see him, you know, here I am, a financial advisor helping people invest. He would be talking about the end of, you know, the world as we know it, you know, in 2014 or 15, and it just kept moving off. Well, it was one thing, you know, what I ended up doing for my clients is it made me more conservative in how I invested for them, which may or may not have been a good thing, knowing what happened, right, over this past several years. But what happened for me is I started taking my money out of the market because it made me so scared of what was coming. And I can't even begin to, I've done some estimations. It's in the hundreds of thousands of dollars missed out on by being so worried from, you know, someone telling me these things. And it was, you know, now a perfect teaching because I recognize how we can be so easily influenced by people, certain people in times of our lives. And even as a coach, I watch that very closely, that it's not about my story. It's about what is this person coming to me for and what do they want? And I felt like looking back, that was his story, not my story. And unfortunately, I didn't have the boundaries of being able to see that that wasn't really true, period. You know, so we live and learn. I'm not as cautious as I was, but I will admit that I think I'm always going to be a more cautious investor. It just is who I am. I like
that's
to
fair.
Really,
I think that's totally fair in that you know that about you. But all at the same time, if you're going to have your money in the market for multiple decades, you don't have to be concerned about what's happening this year.
Yes. Perfect.
But you're not taking money out. Next Tuesday, you're waiting until you're, you know, in your 60s and your 70s. But always knowing your risk tolerance is part of the strategy. We have a few minutes left. I'd love to cover a couple of more bases with you. You're such a great guest. You have so many great insights and so generous with your sharing of your life. What is your best money habit right now, especially maybe something that is timely with the new year, people making a lot of resolutions. You're probably making a lot of goals yourself for your life, for your finances. What's something that you're incorporating into your daily or weekly routine to help with your finances?
So my husband and I have been doing real estate investing for all these years. And so the new thing for the new year is we're just finishing up building a guest house and we're going to be renting that on Airbnb. So I'm all Airbnb right now.
I love it. Side hustle.
Side hustle. Exactly. And for me, I like finding creative ways that play off of our strengths. So my husband's a general contractor. He builds things. We're both really great at being hospitality hosts. We enjoy meeting people. We're here in Sedona, Arizona. People come from all over the world. We're really excited about taking our money, making this investment in something that is a lifestyle choice for us and has a lot of threads where we're getting really excited about who we're going to meet and also the money that we're going to earn from this you know, side hustles. So I've found that those are the ways that I enjoy looking at my money and finding, you know, those synergies that he and I can both enjoy doing. Because, you know, as a business owner in the way what I do, he's not so involved in this business, but I'm excited that we get to work together on that project and have been working together as we build the house.
I love it. I love it. And have you thought about how this money is specifically going to help with your financial patchworking and you know, your goals?
So we have reached a place where it's, you know, we're
It's icing.
However, the cool thing that's just been happening in this past year is my daughter is in college and she was thinking about becoming a veterinarian. We've never had a doctor in our family before, especially from, you know, one generation from where I came from. And she's recently decided she is going to go for it to become a vet. And she's like a straight A student. And it's just the most amazing thing. And I don't want her to have the burden of that, you know, $200,000, you know, med school bill on her own. And so I look forward to finding different revenue streams that will help us ultimately help her.
All right, Lisa, before we go, let's do some So Money fill in the blanks, shall we? So if I won the lottery tomorrow, the first thing I would do is
set up a community foundation to probably give a lot of it away. I would want to focus on causes that are near and dear to my heart. And that's the first thing that comes to mind.
Awesome. The one thing I spend on that makes my life easier or better is?
Really good food. I love buying yummy food that's healthy for my family.
What's your favorite kind of food? Do you have like a go-to cuisine or dish?
No, it's a variety. It's fresh, you know, we have a grocery store here that has all kinds of beautiful, you know, organic food. And so it's whatever is colorful and beautiful.
Colorful and beautiful. I like that. I like those criteria. when I splurge, so like really go over the budget, but you know, when I splurge, I love to spend my money on this because it is worth every penny.
Yeah. So I took my daughter to Paris in the fall. And so travel is the thing. I love exposing my kids to new experiences. And we actually stayed at the Ritz for a day for about 36 hours. Ooh. And I blogged about this whole experience that was the most magical vacation of my whole entire life.
Whoa. Yeah. Oh, that's good money spent. I gotta agree with that. All right. When I was growing up, the one thing I wish I had learned about money is
That it does grow on trees.
Yeah, that it is all over the world.
Yes, that it isn't scarce, that it's just up to my own creativity to figure things out.
Mm-hmm. Yes, amen to that. When I donate, I like to give to blank because
I donate now to Tree Sisters, and I'm in the course of actually looking for some new causes to donate in. So if you have any ideas, send them my way, because yeah, it's time for me to give back even in a new way.
And last but not least, I'm Lisa Peterson. I'm So Money because
I live in gratitude every day for all the love that I have in my life.
Well, we're going to send you some more love your way. Everyone, check out Lisa's website, wealthclinic.com. She's also got a program at thewealthflower.com. And you have a podcast called Art of Abundance. So be sure to find her. She's in many places. We thank you for that. Thank you for being on the show, Lisa, and Happy New Year.
Thank you, Farnoosh.
Thanks so much to Lisa for stopping by. If you'd like to download the transcript, it's very easy to go to somoneypodcast.com. And there you can also listen to the audio. Also, leave me a question for the Friday episodes. Click on Ask Farnoosh, leave a voicemail or write in your question. Let me know too if you'd like to co-host with me on the Friday episodes. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. And I hope your day is so money. Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can see new homes first, and they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes you like so you can find the home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours, even the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person, contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.